Susan, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're very welcome.
Now, first things first, do Australians have a right to travel in the way we might expect? Like, what are some of the things about travelling we might have taken for granted before COVID-19?
Well, that's right. Australia is very unusual in that it's the only OECD country without a human rights piece of legislation at the federal level. So, in fact, you don't have the rights to freedom of movement that you think you might have. So Australia has signed the International Convention on Civil and Political Rights that says you have the right to leave your country and the right to re-enter your country, but there's some provisions around public health, right? But generally speaking, we're only one of five countries that has just stopped any Australians leaving the country. Just blanket ban, and you have to go through an exemptions regime with the Ministry of Home Affairs. So that's quite unusual in the world. So, you know, if you're a Kiwi, you're allowed to leave and you don't have to ask anyone's permission. But in Australia, you can't leave the country at the moment under a biosecurity determination. And then, of course, you can't move within Australia freely either. That's actually under the Australian Constitution. So there's a section that says basically people should be allowed intercourse, it's called. There should be free intercourse between the states under Section 92 that allows movement of people, business, goods, except for, again, if there's serious issues of public health or public order. So the rule is you should be allowed unless you can, kind of thing, under our constitution. And that's what all the argy-bargy is about at the moment, what is reasonable and necessary and proportionate to protect public health.
Right, of course. And I mean, like, if I were immature, the idea that it's called intercourse would be very funny to me, but, you know,
it's extremely funny to first-year law students.
Oh, hilarious, but I am very mature. You know, now we've seen stories, you know, about Australians kind of stuck overseas. More recently, there was that couple stuck in Mexico who had to rely on donated money to get plane tickets home. And we may not be able to leave, but does the government have an obligation to get all Australians home?
No, that's the other thing. I think that's where, for a lot of us, maybe we have a strange idea of what DFAT and our Foreign Affairs Department and what the Australian government owes us in a crisis. But basically, as soon as you leave the borders, there's no right to consular assistance. So anything that's offered is offered at the discretion of the Australian government. And they will try to help you if there's a humanitarian crisis, but only to a point. And they don't have to pay for it either. So there's a consular affairs charter is sitting on the Smart Traveller website, and you can go and have a look at it. And it basically says, you travel at your own risk, you travel at your own risk, you travel at your own risk. And I think maybe Australians are starting to really get that now. Hey, you know what? We travel at our own risk. Once we've left Australian borders, the ability of anybody of the Australian government to get us home, to help us, to pay for things is extremely limited. I actually think DFAT's done an amazing job in trying to get thousands of people home, an extreme amount of effort. But actually, that's, you know, a choice the government's making. They don't have to do it. And there are limits.
Yeah, right. Well, a lot of people are waiting on things to just get back to normal before they press on with their earlier plans. But, you know, I mean, like, at this point, how long is that wait looking like?
Well, I think there's a difference too between kind of discretionary travel and the sort of the desperate things that are happening to lots of, you know, thousands of Australians. So, you know, lots of cases of parents dying over in a country. You know, we have a multicultural nation. A third of Australians are born overseas, and so there might be very serious reasons why someone wants to travel on compassionate grounds, family reunion grounds. There's also a right to family life under the International Convention. So I think what's disturbing to me is that we have been very strict, and, you know, that millionaire guy can go and pick up his yacht, but families can't, you know, someone hasn't been able to visit their dying mother or their their newborn baby or, you know. So there's something a bit wrong with the way the current scheme has been set up. If you have a scheme where no one can go except for an exemption, and you have hundred or thousand people applying for an exemption and only a couple of, you know, I think 30,000 of those getting up over the year, then, you know, that's quite problematic. Then there's questions about, well, how is the exemption being administered and what is the definition of compassionate grounds and, you know, why does the billionaire get things and the other people don't? Why does Danny Minogue get to hang out at home and, you know, all that sort of stuff? So it's not a very good regime.
Yeah, right, of course. So how do you think COVID will kind of completely change the way we think about travelling overseas looking forward?
Well, I think the risk calculation will be different. So I think, you know, a holiday is great, but not if you're stuck for 6 months with no guarantee. Yeah, so I think that would never have occurred to us. I mean, I remember when that earthquake happened in Iceland, a lot of people I remember got stuck all over Europe because of, you know, ash. And everyone was freaking out about that because no one had factored in ash into their plans. You know, that's one thing. But, you know, most other disasters, no matter how horrible, and there's been many, you know, the Indian Ocean tsunami, all kinds of terrible things. But they've never lasted months and months and months and months, and they haven't required the kind of resources you need at the moment to, you know, pay for your own quarantine and, you know, all the other things you would have to do, buy a business class ticket and that sort of stuff. So it makes the risk calculation about leaving home extremely high. So I just think we won't do it so casually anymore. You know, so last year, 11 million people went on a short overseas trip. And so there must be quite a few Australians who went more than once, that means.
Yeah, right.
And it's the highest we've ever had.
Yeah, that is quite a lot.
That's a lot, right? That's, you know, pretty much half of us.
Yeah.
Just under half of us. So I don't think you're going to see those kinds of numbers.
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, is it all bad news? Are there any kind of like silver linings in this situation?
Well, I think for a lot of us, we were already thinking that perhaps the climate impacts of international travel were something that we had to factor in and, you know, change our ways anyway. So for me, I work on climate issues and, you know, I was already just not going to travel anywhere near as much as I was. So I think there are some serious issues in the way that we need to think about the environmental impact of the way we travel, and also, you know, do we really need to go for that short thing for a conference? For academics or for business people, probably not. Yeah. Now that everyone's far more familiar with the way technology works, it's going to be pretty hard to justify everybody going to Singapore for something. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
When we all know how to Zoom.
Yeah, we all got Zoom. So it's kind of like it's become a bit like moot, you know what I mean?
That's right. And I think with the sort of economic situation, you know, we won't have any money to travel anyway. So,
well, that's a big thing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Susan, thank you.
I think the golden age might have lingered for a little while.
Yeah, absolutely. Susan, thank you so much for joining me on the show today to talk about this. It's been great to chat.
You're very welcome. And a big shout out to anyone who is trapped and missing their loved ones. A lot of empathy goes to you.
Yeah, we're thinking of you, definitely. Thank you so much, Susan.
No worries.